It's tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, Westerns. Later on, it's Gunsmoke from 1954. But first, The Frontier Gentleman, with a story called A Meeting with Sitting Bull, from February 9th, 1958, on CBS.
The great chief of the Sioux Indians is Sitting Bull. He's a rather difficult chap to meet, especially when he's planning for war.
Frontier Gentleman. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual accounts. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
The distance from South Sunday to Rosebud in Montana Territory is about 30 miles. Due to a heavy rainstorm and my lack of funds, it had taken me a week to reach Rosebud. Luckily, when I arrived, my remittance from England, $250, had already been forwarded, and I was once again solvent. After posting off my weekly report to the London Times, I went to the most likely place in Rosebud to get local color and information. Except for the bartender polishing his glasses and a cat on the bar, the place was quite empty. I ordered a drink.
Two bits.
Thank you.
It's all right. Hush up, cat. Where are you from, mister?
London.
London, England?
That's right.
Well, if that don't beat all, my great-grandpa come from there.
Uh-huh.
Jackson Beeson's the name.
J.B. Kendall.
Well, howdy.
How do you do, sir? Tell me, Mr. Beeson, what's the situation with the Indians these days?
Well, now you come to the right place for that bit of news. Oh, get away, cat. Yes, sir, we're going to have trouble. You can thank your stars that we got General Gibbon here keeping an eye out. I hear tell Custer's on his way, too.
Oh, bad as that, huh?
Worse. Well, just yesterday, correspondence fella like you, he come in, works on the Montana Telegraph News. Jackson, he says, them Sioux is working up to a boil. Oh, it's going to be wicked. Mighty wicked.
Do you think it'll mean war?
I don't have to think. I know. You cat! Get out of here! Go on! Get out! Get out! Darn cat's a regular drunkard.
This correspondent chap, is he still here?
Charlie Meeker? Oh, sure. He's around somewhere.
I'd like to meet him.
Right nice fella. Now, let's see. You might try up to Dolly's place. Cross the street there. Second house on the right. Can't miss it. Just ask for Charlie. He rooms at Dolly's.
Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. And look, if he ain't there, I'll tell him you're looking for him when he comes back. You stop by tonight.
Right.
Well, hello, early bird.
Good afternoon, madam. this is Dolly's place?
Why, sure it is. You come on in. Ah. It's nice and warm inside, honey.
I'm looking for a gentleman named Charles Meeker.
Charlie? What do you want with him?
Oh, well, I was told I could find him here. The bartender...
Oh, Jack Beeson sent you?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
All right. Well, step inside. I'm freezing my... Mary! Go wake up Charlie. There's a fella here to see him. I guess you better wait in the parlor. Say, now, I hope you'll forgive the looks of this room. Some of the boys got a little rowdy last night. We haven't cleaned it up yet.
Not at all. Charming.
You're new in Rosebud, ain't you?
Yes.
Well, that's nice. That's real nice. I can see you're a gentleman. Always nice to meet a gentleman. Sit down. Make yourself comfortable. Mr.
Kendall.
Well, Mr. Kendall, you're a friend of Charlie's, huh?
No. No, we've never met.
Well, he's a nice boy. He's real nice. He sure never forgets me. Anytime he's in these parts, he brings old Dolly a present. Can I get you a drink?
No, thanks just the same.
Hey, you ain't a dominie, are you?
Dom?
A preacher?
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, I sure do admire to hear you talk. I wish you'd say something else.
Somebody looking for me, Dolly?
Oh, this here is Mr. Kendall, Charlie boy.
All right.
How do you do, sir?
Well, you got business to talk, so make yourselves at home. It's sure been a pleasure, Mr. Kendall. Maybe you'll call again.
Thank you very much.
You'll have to excuse me, Kendall. I just woke up. Big night. Oh. And a big head. What can I do for you?
I understand you write for a newspaper, Mr. Meeker.
Charlie. Yeah, Virginia City, Montana Telegraph News.
I know. I do some correspondence myself for the London Times.
Hey, I'm proud to meet you.
May I return the compliment? Look here. Is it true what I've been hearing, these rumors about a Sioux uprising?
Yeah, more than rumors. It's coming.
Well, this chief, Sitting Bull, have you ever seen him?
Once, a few years back. Big council between one of our government commissions and the Indians.
Oh, I'd like to meet him. See him, you know?
No, not a chance. Not anymore. A while ago, maybe, but those Indians don't trust the white man now. I tell you, they're getting ready for war.
Is there any way to make contact with him?
Probably. There's plenty of Indian scouts, interpreters hereabouts who could, but for a white man, it'd be worth his scalp.
How would one go about it?
Are you serious?
Completely. Do you know where I could find him?
I got a pretty good idea. You want a drink?
No, thank you.
There's talk of a whole lot of Indians moving off the reservations, going up Tongue River country. Might be headed for Sitting Bull's camp.
How far would that be?
30 miles, maybe. Now, listen, mister. When the Sioux go on the warpath, the best place for you and me is someplace else.
Well, do you think you could find me one of those Indian scouts? Someone to guide me to Sitting Bull's camp?
You mean it, don't you?
Absolutely.
What a story. Interview with Chief Sitting Bull? Oh, it's crazy. They'd kill us, sure. No, Kendall, the best thing for you is to talk to some of the old-timers. They'll tell you about him, and then you can send your report in on that. It's a whole lot safer.
That evening in Beeson's saloon, Charlie Meeker found a half-breed interpreter, Johnny Duchelle. He was a big man, dark, with handsome features, and when he smiled, which he did constantly, there was something at odds in his eyes, veiled, a coldness. He was playing a game of solitaire, and as he dealt his cards, I noticed that inside his sleeve was a wrist holster, strapped to it a derringer.
You want to talk with Sitting Bull?
That's right, Johnny.
Him too?
Me too.
Suppose he don't want any talk with you. Suppose he want to take your scalp.
That would be rather awkward.
Johnny, how well do you know the chief?
How well does any man know another?
Charlie says you've done scouting work for General Crook. Well, doesn't that make you Sitting Bull's enemy?
Yesterday I scout for the soldier. Tomorrow maybe I fight with the Indian. Who knows?
Yes. Well, the point would seem to be, whose side are you on if you do guide us?
If I do this thing, you put your trust in me.
I see.
Well, what do you say, Johnny? Can you take us to him?
Black ace on the red two.
Yeah. You got $50, silver?
Kind of high, isn't it?
Sitting Bull, one big chief. You want me to take you to Red Cloud, Crazy Horse? Maybe cost less.
What do you think, Ken?
I'm not sure.
Maybe you find somebody, do it for less. He'd take you to India and cut out your heart, huh?
Now, Johnny's all right. 25 apiece would be worth it.
All right. When, Johnny?
Tomorrow.
Fine.
Take no guns.
Hey, wait a minute.
Indians see you with guns, they say you coming for no good. Without guns, in peace. No guns.
It's sort of risky, isn't it, Johnny?
Not with me along with you.
What time?
We meet outside the state station. 6 o'clock.
See you then.
Well, then you better give it to me right now. There it is. All right.
Well, you still want to go?
I'm not sure about that fellow.
That's a chance you take these days. We can back out.
No. But to be on the safe side, Charlie, I think two guns in shoulder holsters would make me feel a bit better.
Sure. You got them? Never use a gun myself.
Oh, yes, I've got them. Look here, Charlie. Now, this is my idea. No need for you to come along, you know.
What's the matter? You want the story for yourself?
No, not that at all.
I'm sorry.
I only thought that...
Forget it. We'll go together. Hey, how about coming over to Dolly's with me for a nightcap?
No, thanks. Not tonight. Sleep for me.
Oh. Well, see you in the morning. We can pick up horses at the livery stable. So long.
I watched him walk away, a rather short, thin man, shoulders a little rounded. And then he was lost in the shadows, and I had that odd sensation of having lived this moment before. It had been in Peshawar, in northern India. I remembered a good friend who had walked away from me in the night. The next morning, his head was thrown through the barracks window.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Laugh and the world laughs with you. Cry and say, where'd everybody go? Chances are they've taken off in the direction of CBS Radio's Peter and Mary show. Peter Lind Hayes and Mary Healy have a magic way of banishing the blues. Their amusing notions about practically everything, the easy way they sing their songs, and the exciting personalities who visit them all make CBS Radio's Peter and Mary show a cure for the blues. Listen for them on most of these same stations tomorrow. And now we return you to Anthony Ellis' production of Frontier Gentlemen.
The morning was gray, a bit windy. We left Rosebud at 6 o'clock and rode steadily toward the southeast. I could see no sign of a gun on our guide, Johnny Duchel, but his bulky jacket could have hidden an arsenal. For perhaps over an hour, we didn't speak. Charlie, red-eyed from want of sleep and too much whiskey, nodded in his saddle. The half-breed traveled a little ahead of us, cautious, watchful.
Hey, Kendall.
Yes?
Never drink Dolly's Rotgut.
I won't.
I can take the pepper, even the tobacco juice she puts in it. But that whiskey.
You know, we had a cure for your complaint in India.
Oh?
Cherry powder, ginger, a snake's head, preferably a cobra, a big spoon of sugar, stew the whole thing in a pot of strong tea and then drink it down. Exactly. It's a miraculous cure. You'd probably end up chucking the whole mess out the window, but you forgot your headache.
What were you doing in India?
Army, mostly.
Officer?
At one time, captain.
See much fighting?
Enough.
What were you with?
The cavalry regiment.
You don't like to talk about it much, do you?
No, not much.
Hey, better hold up. Johnny's seen something.
In timber. Cheyenne, I think. You stay. I talk to them.
How many? Can you see?
5 or 6. Might be others in the woods.
You know something funny? I'm scared.
Think about your headache.
No, thanks. Too close to my hair. You ever see a scalped man?
No. But I shouldn't worry. The tribesmen do much nastier things to get their trophies in India.
Johnny must know them. Look.
All very friendly. Hello. They must have given their blessings.
You think so?
Either that or Johnny has made an arrangement with them to cut our throats. He looks happy enough.
That tall wolf and his brave. They will ride to the council. Tell of our coming.
Glad to hear it.
We go on now.
Johnny smiled, turned away, and we rode on. I had the distinct feeling that he knew exactly what he was doing, and we didn't. Another hour passed.
If there were more Indians about, we didn't see them. The terrain was becoming more rugged, and when we reached a narrow stream, Johnny called a halt.
We rest the horses.
All right.
Think I'll get myself a drink. Water, that is.
Funny, we haven't seen any more Indians, Johnny.
They all at Great Council.
You seem pretty sure we won't be attacked.
I told Tall Wolf you come in peace.
Possibly there are others beside Tall Wolf who won't feel as he does.
Possibly. We see at the council.
Well, you're not worried, huh?
I am not worried.
You're smiling.
Good for a man to smile.
Depends on his reason.
I smile because you paid me 50 silver dollars to bring you here.
Tell me, Johnny, what will it cost to take us back?
The cost to you will not matter. I think you will not be going back.
He made a slight movement with his hand, and a derringer appeared in it. For a moment, I had forgotten his wrist holster. He was standing no more than 4 feet from me, and I didn't move. If you've ever seen what a .41 derringer can do to a man, you'd understand. Then he brought out a revolver from his jacket and backed away a few steps. That was when I saw Charlie at the stream. He had a rock in his hand, his arm cocked back. At the moment he threw it, the half-breed turned and saw him. Where are you hit, Charlie?
Chest. Boy, that feels worse than Dolly's rock gun.
He's not dead?
No, I'm not dead, you stinking breed.
You, Kendall, take off your jacket. Untie those shoulder holsters. Let them fall to the ground. Move back. Stop. You both got more silver. Give it to me.
I'll spit in your eye first.
I told Tall Wolf I take you to Sitting Bull as my prisoner, alive. He will think well of me, give me place of trust.
Your own mother wouldn't trust you, Johnny.
With much silver, two horses, even a stinking breed will be important man. Give it to me.
You'll find a bag in my jacket.
Good. Now, you both, you walk. I ride behind.
Can you get up, Charlie?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll help you. It's my fault. I should have done something sooner. I wasn't sure about him.
Walk. Cross the stream. Follow the trail.
Come on. Lean on me.
I can't go on anymore.
He is dead?
Let me put him on a horse.
He called me stinking breed. Let him walk.
He can't. He's done in.
Then you carry him.
Let him rest for a minute.
A minute.
Charlie, can you hear me? Listen to me, Charlie. The trail narrows a few yards along. There's a slope on our left. Do you hear me, Charlie?
Yeah.
I'm going to let you fall. If I can get him to take his eyes off me, there's a knife in my boot.
All right. Good luck.
All right, Charlie. Up you come. Getting close, Charlie. Now, when you fall, keep your head down in case he starts shooting.
What a way to die. I could... Dolly's right now.
If we get back alive, I'll join you. About 10 more steps, Johnny. Mm.
now, Charlie. For a moment, I had a glimpse of Charlie sliding, falling down the hill slope. Then he disappeared into the underbrush. I turned to face Johnny Duchelle, the knife in my hand. Johnny was standing in his stirrups, craning his head to see over the trail's edge. He was no more than 15 feet from me. It must have been the horse shifting its weight that disturbed my aim. I threw, and the knife struck high on his shoulder. He half fell from the saddle, and I ran for him. I felt one of the bullets from his gun burn my cheek. Then we were rolling down the hill. Somewhere on the way, he lost the gun, but the knife was stabbing. Cutting at me. Charlie. Charlie. It's all right. It's all right, Charlie. He's finished. He's finished.
Something tells me we don't get to see Sitting Bull today.
Better luck next time.
Hey, Kendall. Whiskey's paid for. But I owe Dolly for room and board. It's only...
Charlie? Charlie? I took Charlie back to Rosebud, to Dolly's place. She had me put the little man on the parlor couch. Then she knelt by his side, took his hand in hers.
Charlie, boy. It's Dolly. This was my place, huh, mister? Like the one I never had. My good, bad boy. Dolly misses you, Charlie, boy. Wake up, son.
Most of Rosebud attended the funeral of Charles Meeker. I sent the story to his own newspaper, as well as to the London Times. And for Charlie, I decided to stay on in Rosebud to have another shot at a meeting with Sitting Bull.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Jeanette Nolan, Lawrence Dobkin, Harry Bartell, and Junius Matthews. Music was composed by Jerry Goldsmith and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Later today, you'll have five more engrossing dramas waiting for you on CBS Radio, starting with Suspense, which today stars Herbert Marshall. You can look forward to plenty of action and plenty of thrills with Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The FBI in Peace and War, Indictment, and Gunsmoke. For good listening, keep listening to CBS Radio. Now, stay tuned for the Ford Road Show, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Johnny Jacobs speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
The Frontier Gentleman, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 9, 1958, on CBS, marking the second broadcast for the show out of about 55 episodes. You are listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Up next, an episode of Gunsmoke that proved to be a good enough story to be repurposed twice. on the television version about 3 years after its original airing and 5 years almost to the day on radio. It's John Meston's story, Mavis McLeod, from August 16, 1954 on CBS.
Gunsmoke. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely.
Breakfast yet?
I'm waiting for Chester to get back from the depot. Somebody told him there's a telegram for me.
Telegram? You should have left it there, Matt.
What?
A telegram usually means somebody's coming to Dodge looking for you, or that you've got to go somewhere and look for them. Either way, it spells trouble.
Well, if it wasn't for trouble, Doc, I wouldn't have a job.
Well, then you ought to quit. It's a poor thing when a man has to make his living off of other people's troubles.
Uh-huh. Tell me, Doc, how long's it been since anybody came to you and told you how good they were feeling, huh?
See now. I mean, you know, I hadn't thought of that. Well, I guess we're pretty much alike after all, man. Well, hello, Chester.
Hello, Doc. I got it, Mr. Dillon.
Well, what are you looking so glum about, Chester? What does it say?
Well, you better read it. Kind of private-like.
Huh? U.S. Marshal, Dodge City, Kansas. Coming to get married. Noon train, Saturday. Meet me. Signed, Mavis McLeod.
Oh, Mavis McLeod. Oh, that's a right pretty name. Oh, she's pretty, too. Where's she from, anyway?
You really gonna get married, Mr. Dillon?
Hey, you're pretty foxy, Matt, keeping this so quiet.
Now, wait a minute, Chester. Oh. If you're all through talking, I'll tell you something.
Yes. Quiet, Chester. This is an important moment.
Well, I'm listening.
All right, all right. Now, this may be kind of a shock to you, but since you're both friends of mine, I thought it'd be best that you be the first to know. I am not about to get married, and what's more, I never heard of any Mavis McLeod.
What?
Well, she still might be pretty, man.
I don't care if she looks like Lily Langtree.
Well, but Mr. Dillon ain't even gonna meet her.
Well, I may meet her, but right now, let's go get some breakfast and talk about something else, huh?
Look at that, Mr. Dillon. Straight up noon, and there comes a Santa Fe right on time.
Yeah.
Well, it's troubling you, ain't it?
No. I think trains should run on time, Chester.
Yes, sir, that's what I mean. Hey, look. There's Miss Kitty going into the depot there, see?
What? Chester.
No, sir, Mr. Dillon. I swear I haven't said a word to her about this. She's probably expecting some mail or packages or something. Anyway, she didn't see us. Say, how are we going to tell Mavis McLeod from anybody else?
I don't know.
Look at there. There's a girl. Would that be her?
Well, I told you I never even heard of her, Chester. How would I know what she looks like?
That little girl's right pretty, Mr. Dillon. She's the only female there.
Okay, let's go ask her.
I'd judge her to be about 18, wouldn't you?
Yeah, about.
Oh, my. I say, she is pretty.
Excuse me, miss.
Yes?
I'm Matt Dillon.
Oh. Well, maybe you can help me.
Maybe.
I'm looking for the U.S. Marshal here. Do you know him?
Oh, I'm the Marshal.
Oh, you are? Well, then you got my telegram.
Yes, I did. I say, that's right. You didn't have my name on it, did you?
Well, of course not. How would I know your name? Oh, my goodness. You didn't think I was coming to marry you, did you? Oh, how awful. I mean, how awful for you.
Well, I'm still a little confused, Miss McCloud. Excuse me. This is Chester Proudfoot.
How do you do, Chester?
Well, I'm proud to know him, ma'am. Miss.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Marshal Dillon. I guess I should have explained more in the telegram.
Well, that's all right. Who did you come here to marry?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Well, not yet. I just got here. You two are the only man I've met.
Chester.
Yes, sir?
Yeah, go over to the depot there and see if you can find Kitty, will you?
Yes, sir. I sure will.
Tell me something, Mavis. How old are you?
I'll be 19 in December.
Uh-huh. Now, where are you from?
I won't tell you.
Well, why not?
Because it isn't polite for a gentleman to ask a lady so many personal questions.
All right. But why did you send me that telegram?
Because I thought I'd be safe with you helping me.
Well, helping you do what?
Get married. Oh, don't look like that. I'm not crazy. They need women out here, don't they? Well, don't they?
Yeah. They need them.
And I'll make a good wife, too. But, of course, it'll have to be the right man, Marshal. I won't marry just anybody, you know. And you can stop shaking your head like that.
I found her, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, my.
Kitty, this is Mavis McCloud.
Hello, Mavis. Welcome to Dodge.
Why, thank you, Kitty.
Kitty.
I know, Matt. Chester told me all about it. Don't mind the Marshal, Mavis. Sometimes he's a little slow to understand these things.
He most certainly is. Why, he's been looking at me as though I were a bug of some kind.
You take care of her, will you, Kitty? And I'll go try to figure something out.
He'll be okay, Matt.
And, Kitty, don't...
Don't worry. I won't take it to the Texas Trail.
Good. You let me know if you need anything, Mavis. Besides a husband, I mean. The next few weeks, I thought and worried about Mavis a lot. But I should have known I was wasting my time. She met a young fellow called Barney Wales, and 3 days later, they got married. Kitty called it love at first sight. But anyway, I knew Barney, and he was a sober, hard-working cowboy who'd started a little spread of his own not far from Dodge. It was a good match, and it looked like they were going to make out fine. At least I thought so, until one day when I was sitting in the office trying to keep cool.
I'm looking for Marshal Dillon.
Oh, come in, fella.
It's not fella, it's mister. Mr. Lou Staley.
Oh? Remember that, huh, Chester?
Oh, yes, sir, I surely will. From St. Louis, Marshal. Now, let's not waste any more time, if you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind, Staley. Who are you looking for?
You know who I'm looking for. Mavis McCloud.
I thought so. Well, what do you want of her?
That's my business, Marshal.
Oh, maybe.
Where is she?
Oh, what makes you think I'd know?
She sent you a telegram from St. Louis. I knew she was headed out here somewhere, so I checked. Mavis isn't the kind to arrive in a place unknown.
I see.
Well, are you going to tell me where she is?
Well, not till I know why you want to see her.
And I'll find her myself. She's around here somewhere.
She's married, Staley.
What?
She's married. Now, why don't you go on back to St. Louis and forget about it, huh?
Who'd she marry?
What difference does it make? You're not going to bother her.
You'll see about that. In the meantime, I hold you responsible for this, Marshal.
Okay. Let's say I'm responsible. Why don't we settle it right now?
No. No, I'll find her first, Marshal. And after I've killed her husband, I'll come looking for you.
Well, forevermore. There's about the bloodthirstiest man I ever did see, Mr. Dillon. He's going to kill everybody.
Well, he might try it, Chester. I think I better ride out and talk to Barney Wales.
No, sir, not today.
What?
Well, Barney and Mavis, they're in town today. I seen them over at the Dodge House this morning. They're staying the night there.
Well, then I'll go find them there before Lou Staley does. Hello, Barney.
Marshal Dillon. Come on in. Hey, Mavis, it's Marshal.
Hello, Marshal.
How are you, Mavis?
Oh, I'm fine. I mean, we're fine, aren't we, Barney?
We sure are. You got to ride out and have dinner with us some Sunday, Marshal. Mavis here is the best doggone cook you ever saw.
That'd be strange if a girl from St. Louis couldn't cook.
Why'd you say that, Marshal?
Mavis ain't from St. Louis. Leastwise, she never told me she was.
It doesn't matter where I'm from, does it, Barney?
Of course not. But how'd the marshal know?
There's only one way. Lou Staley told him.
Lou Staley? Who's he?
Well, I don't know, Barney, but he says he's going to kill you.
What?
For marrying Mavis.
Oh. He loves you, too. Is that it, Mavis?
No. Not exactly.
Well, what then?
I made up the name McLeod, Barney. My real name's Staley.
There's only one thing I want to know, Mavis.
Yes?
You love him?
I hate him.
Okay. Let him come, Marshal. I'll fight him.
No. No, you go out to your ranch. I'll take care of Staley.
I never run from a fight in my life, and I don't aim to start now.
Please, Barney.
It's no use arguing. If this Staley's looking for me, he can find me. What's he armed with, Marshal?
6-gun. Carries it in his belt.
Okay. I'll go about my business here like always, but I'll sure keep one eye open.
Hello, Marshal.
Oh, hello, John.
Evening, Mark.
How are you, Kitty? I was in here with Chester a little earlier. Where were you?
Oh, I took a walk after supper. Anything to stay out of this saloon for a while. Yeah. What do you want me for?
Well, there's a man over there at the bar, Kitty. That tall, dude-looking fella. Huh? You see him?
Who is he?
Well, his name's Lou Staley. Did you ever hear of him?
No.
Yeah, I thought that maybe Mavis McLeod might have said something about him.
She's never mentioned him. But I've hardly seen her since she got married. What's it about, Matt?
Well, Staley's kind of disappointed over Mavis getting married. Says he's going to kill Barney and me and, well, I don't know who.
He is?
Yeah, he followed her out here from St. Louis.
So that's it. Jealous ex-lover, huh?
Mavis' real name is Staley, Kitty.
It is. Well, I guess Mavis kind of fooled all of us. I can understand Staley wanting to kill Bonnie.
That's not my business how Mavis messes up her life or anybody else's, but murder's wrong, Kitty. No matter what the cause, it's wrong.
Matt, look.
Yeah, I see her.
You've seen us, too.
Hello, Marshal. Kitty.
Sit down, Mavis.
You shouldn't be in here, Mavis.
I know, Kitty, but I had to come.
Where's Barney?
He's talking business with some cattle buyers over at the Dodge House. He doesn't know I'm here.
It's no place for you, you know.
It's good enough for Kitty, isn't it?
I work here. I explained all that to you.
Well, I didn't come here for fun. I ran into Chester out in the plaza, and he told me I'd find Lou Staley here. I've got to talk to him. Probably won't do any good, but I've got to try.
Well, he's over there at the bar.
I know, I saw him. But I didn't dare walk up to the bar, not with all those men watching.
Okay, Mavis, I'll get him. No, I guess I won't have to.
I knew I'd find you sooner or later, Mavis.
I want to talk to you, Lou.
It's too late for talk. I told you what I'd do, and I'm going to do it.
Lou, I want to talk to you alone.
Go out back, Mavis. The door's right over there. Nobody will bother you outside.
Come on, Lou.
Won't do any good, Mavis. You know it won't.
I don't like this, Kitty.
Why not? Talking's better than fighting, isn't it?
No, talking isn't going to stop him. You know, there's something wrong about him, Kitty. It's sort of like he can't hear or see anything but himself. Like he's all alone in the world.
Any man in love acts like that, man.
Well, maybe. But if I didn't think he'd just keep coming back, I'd tie him up and throw him on a train for back east.
I wish you'd do something. Matt.
Yeah, come on.
Matt, look, it's Mavis.
Yeah. Mavis. Mavis.
Did he kill her?
No, she's still alive.
You go after Staley, Matt. I'll take care of her.
I'll get Staley, but I'm going to carry Mavis over to Doc's first. You better come along, Kitty.
Well, Mr. Dillon, that's the worst thing I ever heard of. Shooting a woman.
Well, Doc says she's got a fair chance, Chester.
You're going to tell Barney about it and then go after Lou Staley, huh?
I'm going to do more than that.
You are? What?
You'll see.
Well, I hope Barney's still here at the Dodge House.
I hope so, too, Chester.
Maybe that's him standing over there. I know that one fella. He's a cattle buyer.
Oh, there's Barney with his back to us.
I got better beef than that, but you're going to have to pay for it.
Oh, Barney.
Hi, Marshal.
Oh, there's a Marshal.
How are you, gentlemen?
What are you doing here, Marshal? Something wrong? There is, ain't there? I can tell.
Yeah, there's something wrong, Barney.
Well, what is it? Tell me. Where's Mavis?
Now, wait a minute, Barney. Look, do you trust me?
Well, sure I do, Marshal. Of course. Why shouldn't I?
Well, no reason, but I want you to think about it when you wake up. All right, gentlemen, don't interfere in something you don't know anything about. Chester.
Yes, sir.
Go get a rope and tie him up, but fix it so he can walk. And when he comes to, take him to jail.
But, Mr. Dillon, he...
Do it.
Okay, sir.
I warned the cattle buyers there not to say a word to anybody about Barney. And then I went out looking for Lou Staley. I tried every saloon and gambling house in Dodge. But finally, I gave it up and went over to the jail and got Chester. It was past midnight when we entered the Dodge House once more, had a talk with a clerk, and then went up to Barney and Mavis' room.
You think Staley's run off, Mr. Dillon?
No, Chester, he won't run till he does what he came here to do. Now, here it is. Okay, get inside.
Yes, sir.
All right, you stand over there, Chester, so you'll be behind the door when it opens.
All right. Bailey's sure going to be surprised if he does come here, ain't he?
Yeah, unless that clerk downstairs bungles it.
Well, all he's got to do is say Barney come in a while ago and went upstairs.
That sounds easy. But he might get scared and say anything.
What's there to be scared of a man who shoots women?
Now, the clerk doesn't know about that, Chester. And besides, Staley may be crazy, but he's armed and he's dangerous.
Yes, sir, I guess you're right. Say, Barney got real wild when he come to and found himself all tied up. I had a terrible time with him. He blamed...
Wait a minute. Quiet, Chester.
You think it's him?
All right, Wales, you coward. Where are you?
Hold it right there, Staley.
No!
That's Doc's office at the top of the stairs, Bunny.
She says Mavis is going to be okay, huh?
Yeah, she's doing fine. Now, here we are.
Wait a minute, Marshal.
Yeah?
About last night, I'd have found Lou Staley somehow, and I'd have killed him any way I could, Marshal.
That might have been murder, Barney.
Yeah. I guess this is the first time I ever thanked the man for knocking me out. Let's go on in now.
Hello, Matt. Barney?
Where's Mavis, Doc?
She's in the back room there. And except for a little fever, she's coming along fine, Barney. Because she'll have to stay quiet for a few days. You can't be moving her around.
Can I see her now, Doc?
Sure, go ahead there. Mavis told me about the shooting, Matt. You know what happened?
No, what, Doc?
Well, she tried to take Staley's gun away from him, that's what. They were fighting over it, and it went off. He didn't try to kill her at all.
Huh? You know, it's funny about Staley.
What, man?
Most men would have tried to kill a wife that ran off and married somebody else.
Wife? Oh, no, you don't mean that. And Mavis seems like such a nice girl.
You never know.
Marshal Dillon?
Yeah.
Mavis would like to see you.
Oh, okay.
Hello, Marshal.
Mavis?
There's something I want to tell you, Marshal.
Okay.
Barney already knows. I told him yesterday after you left.
Now go on.
It's about Lou Staley. I know what you think, but I've known him all my life, Marshal. And Lou was crazy. There was something wrong with him. I guess I was ashamed of it, or I'd have told everybody sooner, especially Barney.
You're not responsible for his being crazy?
No, wait. Lou always did say he'd kill any man I married. That's why I ran away.
Now you're asking an awful lot of him, Mavis, crazy or not.
Marshal. Lou Staley wasn't my husband. He was my brother.
Mavis, you've been nothing but trouble to me ever since I got that telegram. And I don't want to ever see you again. Unless it's across your dining room table some Sunday.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Eleanor Tannen, and Sam Edwards. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, on Tuned to Yesterday from CBS Radio, heard on August 16, 1954. And that wraps up this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.